Welcome to the Ward Zero podcast, covering the civic issues you most want to talk about.
You are now entering Ward Zero.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 14 of the Ward Zero podcast. My name is Asmahan Razavi, and I am joined by Darren Krause and Jeremy Zhao. I want to begin by saying, in the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge that we live, work, and record this podcast on the traditional territories of the Blackfoot Confederacy, the Tsuut'ina, the Stoney Nakoda Nations, the Métis Nation Region 3, and all people who make their homes in the Treaty 7 region of Southern Alberta. We are going to be delving into budget this episode. It's going to be a really interesting chat, but as always, we're going to begin with some hot takes. And I think I'm going to go first. I hope that's okay, guys. Okay, so there was a really interesting piece that came out in the Herald recently, and it was an article about a discussion that was had with Deb Yedlin. And what I thought was really, really interesting is that there was a stat in the article. So it says 82% of those aged 18 to 24 and 68% of those 25 and older believe Calgary needs to address racism and discrimination to attract the workforce it wants. And the point that the CEO of the chamber, Deb Yedlin, was making is that Calgary needs a rebrand to attract workers, reflect diversity. I think, because, you know, I might've had an op-ed like this a few months ago, I'm just saying, but that reflects the actual city and the population of our city. We are, you know, the third most diverse city in this country. This discussion keeps happening, but I'm waiting to see what it actually means in terms of tangible things that we as Calgary are going to do. And there was quite a bit of dialogue about this article because it was tweeted out with a caption or with a tweet that said, "Lose the cowboy hat. Chamber says Calgary needs a rebrand to attract workers." And so everybody was like talking about whether or not losing the cowboy hat is what we need to be a less racist city or anti-racist city, I should say. Oh, and like what that, you know, what all that means and what the role of like Stampede is. And I think so much of this discussion is like missing the point. Like, it's not about like losing the cowboy hat. It's about the fact that Calgary has other stories to tell too. And it often feels like we are only telling one story. And so it's not about losing one thing. It's about also adding the different voices that exist in our city. And I think the fact that so many young people want Calgary to do that means that we have to do it to continue to keep people here and to attract people here. So that is my hot take.
And I just wanted to add to that, whether or not we quote unquote cancel the cowboy hat or not, Canada's slated to bring in what, 500,000 people, or they want to bring in 500,000 people in terms of immigration a year. So your demographics are going to change. You know, Calgarians are going to have to understand that the demographics of the city are going to have to change regardless of what happens, regardless of what kind of messaging we want to send out, or perhaps we're quote unquote canceling here. But I really wanted to highlight that point. Change is happening whether you like it or not.
Okay, Jeremy, should we go to you for the next hot take?
Yeah, so obviously budget week was very interesting. I think one of the things that didn't catch me off guard was the commentary around this perceived notion of a silent majority. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not true, but it kept being brought up to justify not having, you know, severe, we'll call it, tax increases or trying to hold the line, as you might say. But it was interesting that kept being bringing it up, and then kind of downplaying all the people who did show up to say, hey, our messaging or our message to council might be a little bit different than what perhaps they wanted to hear, or perhaps what they were hearing from emails, phone calls, you know, letters being sent to the offices. And I just thought, well, maybe this sounds a little bit mean, but, you know, often this silent majority that seems to be taxed heavily also are the same ones after the fact that go, hey, where are my services at? How come my potholes aren't getting fixed? Or how come these services aren't up to the quality that I expect them to be? So I do find that narrative. Very, very interesting. And then perhaps it only comes up every 4 years. Perhaps it comes up every time a reporter asks them a question. But I just this notion of a silent majority just is so interesting on at least on a city level.
You know, there an interesting dichotomy emerged. Just pursuant to your point there, Jeremy, I had a little bit of trouble with that as well, but for different reasons. And here's the interesting reason why. We had this deluge of people come forward saying they want more services, they want better transit, they want better attention to Calgary's climate strategy. And yes, of course, that idea that there was a silent majority, people who didn't come out to express that they didn't want a tax increase. The funny thing is, and I run some risk here lumping everybody in together, but I would suggest that a lot of those folks are the ones who come out en masse to public hearings when there is a big multifamily project in their area. Here's the difficult part for me. Is I wonder why, when there is something that could help a neighborhood, multifamily, improve affordable housing, is better for the city in terms of climate and whatnot, why isn't there the same mass of people who came out during this budget going to those public hearings? And likewise, why do we not see the people during the budget, those same people from the public hearings, when they come out by the dozens to oppose these multifamily units, why were they not at budget? Because the thing that they were that we were told was, well, maybe they couldn't get away from their work or from, you know, whatever commitments they had in order to be there at the budget. There was 2 days worth of hearings. And I guess my response to that would be they seem to quite often have no problem showing up for these public hearings, because I would say that the Venn diagram on those two groups is probably fairly overlapping. So it just really presented an interesting thing. We've got two different things happening, budget versus a planning public hearing, and different groups are attending each one. I found it very confusing, to be honest with you.
I just go, if your mind's made up already, why have the public hearing, right? If the commentary is, okay, there's a silent majority that we're clearly not listening to, then why do we hold these public hearings? Who cares? If the individuals who show up are, we'll call it a vocal minority, as they're always labeled, it doesn't matter what issue they come up with, then why have these public hearings? Why are you working till 11 o'clock at night when it's a foregone conclusion? Like, get yourself some extra hours of sleep.
I mean, I feel like I'm going to have a lot more to say about this when we talk about budget. So I'm going to reserve my comment for then. And I'm going to move to you, Darren, to talk about your hot take, because it's some wild times right now. and tell us what's going on.
I want to make this short, because to dive in too deep, look, I don't want to shamelessly self-promote, but go read the pieces that we've done on the latest in the Sean Chu situation and this informal resolution. Many of the listeners will know that Sean Chu admitted to taking a photograph of the mayor's license plate in a secured garage. Well, it came out afterwards that it was all settled through an informal resolution. An informal resolution means two things. Number one, we don't know what the investigation entailed, the details of it, what the specific sanctions were. None of that is reported publicly. And so I'm thinking to myself, any counselor could have the option of going through an informal resolution when they have breached the code of conduct. And to me, that is a serious oversight in the code of conduct for elected officials. It essentially gives them an out to have something that is not made publicly available. The transparency aspect there is really, really terrible. There's not even a set of criteria that would determine what can be resolved through an informal resolution and what can't be. What makes it worse is that the integrity commissioner cannot speak about it. So had the mayor not brought up the photograph incident, and had Sean Chu not admitted to shooting the photograph, and us following up with the city and finding out why this didn't come to the ethics commissioner and there be a public report on it, nobody would have ever known that that had happened. And I think that that's a serious breach of public trust.
I completely agree. I think it's, you know, first of all, I want to say I thought it was pretty brave of Mayor Gondek to come forward and talk about the fact that, you know, Councillor Chu took that photo. And I also want to say, I mean, yes, it's a serious breach of public trust, but it's also a system that is not friendly to people who have been victimized, because I cannot imagine being in Mayor Gondek's shoes, knowing that someone put my safety at risk, not just my own safety, you know, the safety of my family at risk that way. And then having to go through a process like this that really has like no teeth, essentially, nothing really substantive behind it, it feels like, and then have to like, you know, not talk about it, be quiet about it, and just live in the state of like, I've been, I don't want to say victimized, because I know she's portrayed a lot of strength, but you know, I've been targeted in this way. My safety has been put at risk in this way. And I just have to go on and continue. And I think that shows a lot of strength on the mayor's part, but it is strength that should not have to be shown, because nobody should have to be put in that situation to work with someone who put your safety at risk in that way. That is so unacceptable for me. Okay, so we do have a few quick hits, lots going on nowadays. Darren, I'm going to throw it over to you.
Oh, that's right. You know, and a lot of this stuff, because I hope to get the podcast out quick, a lot of this stuff is actually fairly breaking. The city of Calgary rolled out, literally, the new mock-up of their new LRV. That's the light rail vehicle that's going to appear on the new Green Line. And what's cool about this one that is so different from what Calgarians really know is that it's a low floor transit car. And so that means that in a lot of cases, people are just going to be able to walk up to the LRT and walk right on, as opposed to going on a platform. So this does two things, at least from my mind and some of the coverage that I've done on the LRT. First, it makes it way more accessible for way more people, but also it gives the city and the Green Line team the flexibility to integrate the stations into the community. Right now, built, you know, the way the 80s style, though it has gotten a bit better, the stations are these big, often brutalist structures that separate everything in a community. And what the new stations are meant to do is to make it like a continuous traffic area where people are coming in, coming out, but it's all at street level. And I think that lends itself to a little bit better integration with the communities. And these low floor cars allow for that to be possible. So that happened today. Also, MLA Jason Kenney resigned as we got on to the show here today. Esmahan goes, did you see what happens? Oh my goodness. Yeah, he said, and I will quote, "I would like to thank the wonderful people of Calgary Lougheed for the privilege of representing them over the past 5 years. I am proud to have led a government that delivered on 95% of its election commitments to Albertans. However, a different government is in place and the next election will occur in a few months. So after a great deal of reflection and consultation, I have concluded that now is the best time for me to step aside as MLA." Blah, 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 blah. But for now, I close with this reflection. Whatever our flaws or imperfections, Canada, and I believe Alberta, are in many ways the envy of the world. This is not an accident of history. We are the inheritors of great institutions built around abiding principles which were generated by a particular historic context. Okay, I'm not going to go on only because it's a little bit boring for me. But he did, you know, thank himself in many ways for the 25 years of public service, but also thank the people around him who have provided that opportunity. Now, I bring up that one first because the other quick hit is the Alberta Sovereignty Act was brought up today in the legislature. It's going to be the first bill. And I think through Kenny's statement, Kenny was a big believer in Confederation. Yeah, he had his beefs with Ottawa and he wanted to protect Alberta and Alberta's interests, but I don't think that he wanted to go about it the same way that Danielle Smith did or does. And that's through the Alberta Sovereignty Act, which is going to be tabled as the first thing. And Esmahan, I know that you have some thoughts on the Alberta Sovereignty Act and what it might mean for the province.
It is wild. Like, I mean, I think we all expected, or, you know, we'd actually all speculated that it was first going to be pretty extreme. And then over the last little bit, I think people were saying things like, oh, like, you know, it's all going to be fine. She's going to moderate, blah, blah, blah. So I just want to read a couple of things that the Sovereignty Act entails, because I think that they are some of the scariest things I've ever seen. This is a tweet from Jason Markusoff. New: Smith's Sovereignty Act does much of what she said it would do. Let province refuse to enforce federal laws it deems harmful, and more, like giving Smith cabinet power to circumvent legislature to change laws. Like, can you imagine if Trudeau was given that power and the reaction of people here? Like, that is, I don't even know what to say about how authoritarian that is. And then there's one more I want to read, because that was the one that really shook me. Essentially, I think it was from a tweet from Lisa Young. Oh yeah, here we go. Lisa Young. So the government of Alberta proposes to give itself the power to compel an entity to violate federal law. So much for freedom, everyone. So much for freedom.
So much for the rule of law, too. I mean, laws, what are these? Well, it's the world according to Danielle Smith now, or at least in Alberta. And for me, that's a pretty, I mean, I won't go as far as to say scary, because, you know, how often or how is this going to happen? Or is this just saber rattling by Danielle Smith to let Justin Trudeau or whoever ends up taking power in Ottawa that, hey, don't mess with us. You need to think very long and very hard about the kind of legislation that you are putting in, you know, whether it's related to pipelines or the carbon tax or whatnot. But you need to think long and hard about the impact it has on Alberta, because we just won't follow it if it's not in our interest. So it really remains to be seen on how this actually will be implemented. But it, on first blush, I think the wording used in the Sovereignty Act is a little bit scary, no doubt.
Yeah, and good luck attracting investment with this kind of legislation. That is all I have to say. So we're going to move into the main section of our podcast, and we are here to talk about budget. What a big event. It's what we've all been waiting for, us political nerds, councillors of the city of Calgary, deliberated and eventually voted on the city's multi-billion dollar four-year budget. It was a almost full week long process. What happened initially, and Darren, I'm actually going to go to you for some insight, because I know that you were tweeting from morning to night as you were working hard to keep us all informed about what was going on minute by minute. But it was a week long process. It started off with administration bringing forward a proposed budget. Then there was a public hearing lasted 2 days, I believe. And Darren, you can correct me on this. It was a record number of people who turned out to speak at a public hearing. Is that correct? Or a public hearing on budget?
For a budget public hearing. I believe that the anti-racism special meeting had more people at it, but this was definitely big for the budget.
Okay. And then that was followed by some council amendments to the proposed budget, and then it passed. So Darren, you were there, you know, all week. Tell us about it.
Well, you did a fantastic job summing it up, Esmahan. I think What was interesting for me was maybe the end result. I could talk about the process and us journalists, when we sit up there in the little crow's nest up there, I mean, there's a lot of chatter about the efficiency and the questions and the performative nature of counsel. But I think there were some real moments where we started to flesh out the things that Calgarians want, how much they were going to cost, why certain business units would or wouldn't be able to do those things. And so I think for a lot of counselors, it was a really good opportunity for them to drill down into the information that they needed to make the case for what ended up being that final amendment. It was a big omnibus, which, you know, for those who aren't familiar with that sort of term, but it's an all-encompassing sort of motion that includes a number of different points all rolled into one main amendment. And I think the value in that, while it can be difficult to see on a computer screen, I'm not going to lie, but what it shows to me is that there was some alignment on the part of counselors to come together for certain areas that they thought were important. Obviously, a lot of civic partners got some extra money. We had the Calgary Fire Department got a little bit of extra money. Transit fares were frozen, and also they eliminated transit fares for 12 and under, both of those for 2023. But also some big projects, the 5A network, the city's always accessible for all ages and abilities pathway system. It got a big boost. It got $40 million. And I think that's something that a lot of people were after. So when you see some of those things come out, I think a lot of people were happy with that general outcome. I did talk with some counselors. I know that Courtney Walcott had said this before, but I also got the opportunity to speak with Raj Dhaliwal over the weekend. There was a feeling that maybe more could have been done. And the city's own satisfaction surveys revealed that 54% of Calgarians were at least willing to take an inflationary increase to their property taxes, and many were willing to take more than inflation. And I think for those folks like Councillor Dhaliwal and Councillor Walcott, and maybe others, actually Councillor Giancarlo Carra would have liked to see a little bit more as well. There was some opportunity to maybe add in another percent to the property tax rate, and that's the equivalent of maybe $17 million that could have been added in to bolster some of these areas even more. The mayor called it a moderate budget. I know that's kind of how it's been seen because it does account for basically just population and inflation. But what I would take away from it is that the increases or the area that they use the reserve cash for were very targeted, and they were for a certain purpose to get the city to a certain point in some of its policy goals that it was trying to meet.
Thanks, Darren. That is really helpful. And there is, I think, so much to delve into. One of the comments I want to make is that I thought that the public hearing was actually, in some respects, an effective example of what advocacy can do, because the initial budget that was proposed, I mean, by administration was pretty lean, I would say, and did not include funding to some of the stuff that we saw eventually brought forward in the omnibus bill. And I don't know, I tuned into the public hearing intermittently, and I think I tuned into it when there were things I liked being talked about, because I heard a lot of people talk about climate, talk about transit, and talk about, you know, these strategic priorities that the city itself, the council itself had set for our city. And it felt to me like they gave council some cover to go forward with this, you know, omnibus motion and fund some of these things that were missing.
Darren, I had an interesting, I guess, take when I read your article, and then when I read every other reporter's article, you use slightly different numbers when you were talking about the budget, you talked about 200 million. I think the mayor actually referred to 200 million, but everybody else referred to about $140 million one-time takeaway. And then when you reported on the tax increase, you had a slightly higher tax increase rate compared to everybody else. I wanted to understand what that thought process was like, because I saw that and it was very intriguing to me as to why you would report it that way versus how the other reporters did it.
Thank you for the question, Jeremy. Let me explain. So first of all, what I did was, well, that omnibus motion that Esmahan and I have talked about, that was the straight up 140 million. And I think a lot of journalists just used that baseline as the reserve and surplus funding because it was very, very easy. It was very, very cut and dry. I'm not saying that I did anything better. I just took all of the other numbers, like the 40 million from the city's real estate reserve to fund the downtown revitalization, the 20 million from the Calgary Parking Authority's parking reserve for an additional 20 million for the 5A network, $2 million from the snow and ice control reserve. I lumped everything together, not just what was in the omnibus motion, because that was $140 million, but I added on the rest of the reserve ask from some of the other motions from other councillors. That addresses the 202 million. As far as the tax rate goes, tax time is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. And I will say, and I have no problem saying, that the city does a terrible job of making it clear. They provide a lot of information if you want to get the information yourself, but the city does not do a very good job of streamlining the communication on taxes. And I think it was compounded even further this year when the mayor tried to make it an issue that the tax rate was being lowered because everybody's property value was going up. Forget about the tax rate, folks. I know the mayor wants you to know about the tax rate. The tax rate means nothing. The percentage of your property tax increase is what Calgarians care about. And the predominant number of properties in this city that the average taxpayer cares about is the typical single family home. The tax increase on a typical single family home valued at the median of 550,000 is 5.2%. However, when you blend the tax rate in for the non-residential, when you blend in the provincial portion of the tax, when you put all of that together, it blends out to a 4.4% property tax or tax increase overall under the big umbrella. The difference between my number and others' numbers was that they did the overall global number for businesses, including the provincial tax, including the single family home or residential tax. Mine just focused on the single family home because we believe that that's the one that impacts the most people in Calgary or the most of our readers. So that's why I did it the way that I did it. But I fully understand that it may cause some confusion. Judging by the look on your face, Jeremy, you're like, man, I would not want to cover the tax conversation at City Hall.
Oh, I think it was just more like, you know, what reporters want to report on, right? There are all these numbers and they could choose any number, but they've purposely chosen or they've specifically chosen certain numbers. I don't know what the rationale or maybe it's an editorial thing, maybe it's a personal thing, maybe it's just get it out the door kind of a thing. But I just thought those two numbers were very important compared to everybody else that did the reporting, right? It wasn't like you were presented different documents. Everybody had the same baseline. It's just how you reported at the end of the day.
So just so you know, I'm not off my rocker in reporting. When the city's communications did come out, they reported it as the average typical single family home in Calgary will see a 5.2% property tax increase. So we tried to stick with what, and I think the reason why the city does that is because they wanted to make sure that the vast majority of the volume on their tax base knew the impact that it was going to have on them. And it ultimately amounts to around $10 a month for those people who are around 550,000. And don't even get me started on talking to you about, well, it's 550,000 if the value of your home rose by the median to 14%. If it was higher than 14%, you're going to pay more than $10 a month. If it was lower than that 14%, you're going to pay less than $10 a month. It really does start to get convoluted in the city's revenue neutral tax system. Wow, did we go down a rabbit hole, Esmahan? You're like, why do we have to talk about the specifics of tax? I want to talk about climate and transit.
Oh,
and
you know me. But I was going to segue into it really nicely because I was going to compliment you on another piece of reporting, Darren, because LiveWire put out what I thought was a really, really effective piece over the weekend, Calgary Budget Breakdown, what will all the extra money be used for? And you kind of broke down some of the different pieces that were in the omnibus. I keep wanting to say omnibus bill. It's not a bill. It's an omnibus motion. Too much
actually,
American politics.
If you really want to get particular, it's not an omnibus motion either. It was an omnibus amendment
right.
to the main motion.
Right. Omnibus amendment. So for example, $40 million to Calgary's 5A network, $40 million cash for downtown, $20 million Foothills Fieldhouse, $19 million mental health and addiction strategy. So that was a really... I thought that, first of all, that was an effective piece of reporting, but I also wanted to say that there's a really great quote from Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, where she talked about how a government budget is not just like, you know, numbers allocated towards line items. It's actually like a reflection of government's values and priorities. So I wanted to ask you if you felt like this omnibus amendment says something about what this council focuses on or believes in, or if it's kind of a evidence of any kind of like, you know, broader strategic vision on Calgary's future.
Are you asking me personally?
Yeah.
I'm not going to answer. Nobody wants to hear my opinion on this, but I hope that Raj doesn't give me crap because we were just talking at the Canada-Croatia game on Sunday, but he said, this isn't really a budget. This is basically money in, money out. Here's what we're going to do with it. He says, a budget is a vision for where you want to go in the future. So if I'm to use what Raj has said, I would say that it's not really that thing that's very visionary. I think that there's a lot of band-aids in here. And the reason I say that is because one-time funding, for those of you out there who aren't familiar with the city budget, it's not baked into the base budget. So after 4 years, we're going to have the Federation of Calgary Communities. We're going to have Platform Calgary. We're going to have the Calgary Fire Department. We're going to have the Indigenous Relations Office. We're going to have them all coming back going, you know, we've done all this work up to this point. And boy, oh boy, it would sure be a shame if we weren't able to continue. And they're going to have to keep asking for the money. I think a budget plans for these things in the future, and that lays out a city's priorities. If I want to build or buy a new home, what I do is I start laying the groundwork for that 10 years in advance, and I start, you know, squirreling away money here and there, putting it into a reserve, doing this, start laying a path for me to own that nice new home that I want to own. What I see is the city going, oh gosh, yeah, you know what? It really is going to look good if we dump $40 million into the 5A system and we get people off our backs for a little while. And this allows us to do a lot. $19 million for the mental health and addiction strategy. Boy, they're going to do a lot of stuff. Oh boy, when they come, you know, 4 years from now, what's that number going to look like? So they haven't baked any of this cost in, or even the incremental increases into the budget. And so to me, on the surface, the omnibus motion sure does signal where they would like to spend money in their base budget. But what it shows to me is actually, we haven't followed our policies and our priorities over the past 10 years. And now we are forced to back it up with one-time cash. And what's to say that they don't continue doing this in another or in another four-year budget cycle?
I don't think we ever followed the plan, right? We had a vision, at least when I was more active 10 years ago, to try and have a plan in place. You know, you look 10 years later, it hasn't transpired really to anything. I guess if you read the Sprawl article or the Sprawlcast story recently, right, the service hours have actually trended downward, right? The complete opposite of what the city had proposed, which, you know, maybe to some is okay. They go, the city should do the bare minimum. And I think there's a lot of Calgarians out there who perhaps still kind of relish that small town feel. Calgary's a big city. Calgary wants to still claim to be a world-class city, but it still wants that small town feel, which is kind of the same discussion in Victoria as well. But it's not like that. And that reality is gone. That reality doesn't exist anymore. And it's and there's a huge cost to it. And both of you, I'm going off tangent here. Both of you refer to the mental health funding. You know, the curious thing about that was the quote from our War 10 counselor, Andre Chabot, to say, is this really within our lane? Is this truly something that the city should be doing? And perhaps there is a purpose to it, but is it going to be effective? Is throwing, you know, about $20 million really going to do much, or is it better under a provincial umbrella? And, you know, those conversations, you know, perhaps we don't want to hear at times, but they are legitimate to say, where does the city start and end, right? We saw that very clearly with the mask mandate. The province just stepped in and said, nope, you're not doing it anymore. So, you know, was that $20 million? I don't know if the phrasing's better spent elsewhere is correct. It's just, is it worth it for the city to pursue something and then be taken, have that power taken away later on?
You know what? It did spur a little bit of a conversation overall, because to a certain degree, you have to understand that in many ways, Andre Chabot is right. But what some counselors said was, it doesn't mean that we should abdicate our responsibility to help others. And in a lot of cases, and I think that every municipal politician would tell you this, as would probably every provincial politician, I guess I can use the S word. Well, no, let's just say crap runs downhill, right? What the feds offload to the provinces only have a certain capacity and they offload a bunch of stuff to the cities. And this is one of those things that gets offloaded to the cities. And it's just unfortunate that the city has this put on them when a better structure provincially would help and save them the cash, but also a better structure perhaps federally that would help the provinces deal with it might help the provinces deal with the issue as well. But I do believe that you don't want to leave these people out just because the province won't fund it. And I think that's where the city of Calgary's kind of stepped in.
And I would argue, like, even on, I mean, in the specific case, for example, mental health and addiction, it's having, like, it's an issue that has like tangible effects on one's experience in the city, on Calgarian citizens. And so in some ways for the city not to step up here would have been to my mind, like an abdication of responsibility in some way. And I think sometimes, like, and I think this is a good example of, you know, sometimes we all talk about, like, and I like to talk about systemic change and how we have to work on these like systems that create these sorts of problems, for example, inequity or whatever. But that doesn't mean that at the same time, you can't be taking steps like this to help like ameliorate the conditions on the ground. And I feel like you have to do both, but you can't lose sight of doing both, because if all it is these like little steps, then that broad systemic problem might get worse or will continue.
Well, I just go they always go, well, it's not in my lane, so I'm not going to deal with the problem. Well, the problem is going to pop up elsewhere, right? Like we could, you know, not do anything about, you know, addressing climate change. And then later on, it shows up in our insurance bills. Later, it shows up on things that are not government responsible, you know, items, but it shows up in our personal lives. And then we go, oh no, why did my insurance go up like 300%? Or why am I not covered anymore, right? There are now cases, for example, if you live close to, you know, basically the shoreline, you know, at least on the Vancouver side, where companies are very reluctant to give you coverage. So then who has to end up covering for that? It's going to be the government. It's going to probably be the government to cover it up in some sort of way. So this kind of relates back to the long-term, short-term kind of planning, right? Where do we, and it, this is perhaps more of a city, not just a city discussion, but a overall discussion. If we don't plan long-term, then unfortunately it's going to show up elsewhere.
Well, but we can't just plan long-term. Jeremy, you are just as well versed as I am in the 10,000 plans the city of Calgary has. And you have to go back and ask yourself, how many of them have been executed? And, you know, I'll quip here. I guess maybe this will end up being publicly, but just imagine how much money we could save as a city if we stopped paying so many people to develop plans and just put that money into the action that we wanted, because we don't actually do the plans, but yet we spend so much time and so much resources developing these plans that are never implemented. We always just say, oh gosh, we just don't have the money to do that. Like, you know, to your point on the Sprawlcast, the primary transit network in this city was something that was put together in the original Route Ahead. The primary transit network is that 10-minute service, you know, at least 5, if not 7 days a week for 15 hours a day. That was something that was discussed 10 years ago. How many hours were put into that plan? Did any of it get executed? No. To your point, as in the Sprawlcast, they've cut service hours, and we're not even talking pandemic service hours here. We're talking about cuts to transit prior to the pandemic. So are we actually funding the plans that we're spending hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in resources creating? Are we even funding those plans? And if not, why not?
I think the other thing to that too is like, the longer you defer these decisions, the more expensive the reality gets. Like, putting off a problem always makes it worse. We all know this from like our own personal lives, right? And so I think, I mean, kind of like just going back to that discussion about like, you know, the budget and a vision, you know, like a strategic vision for the city and how it can move forward. I hope that the sort of step that we've seen taken now, and I agree with the mayor when she says it's a moderate budget, is part of like a larger pivot or a larger step maybe towards like, you know, delivering on this like broad strategic vision, because the appetite is there, right? The appetite is there amongst citizens. Like, people came forward and, you know, talked about it. Darren, you made a reference earlier to like, you know, the city satisfaction survey. So I think these decisions just, they can't be deferred for too much longer.
You know, and to Councillor Jasmine Meehan's credit, she put forward a motion that would see these budget discussions continue on and be a regular part of, like, have a working group to discuss the budget ongoing. How do these things get into our budget moving forward so that they can be incrementally put into some of these budgets so that it does actually reflect the city's policies and their stated goals? Probably the best thing to come out of this budget was interesting, and Jeremy, you probably laugh, a plan on how to do the budget better. you know, we're gonna take time to create a plan to plan how we can budget better. The city's been at this for 100 years. You would think somebody might have come up with something like that beforehand. And if they had, why aren't they following it? Or where did we fall off the rails here? It was an interesting experience, to say the least. But in the end, I think a lot of groups were happy with how it ended up.
Okay, well, we've talked a lot about budget. I hope it informed people. I would encourage you to take a look at, and he didn't ask me to do this, but I thought Darren's piece that came out this weekend on like the things that came out of that omnibus amendment is quite good. So take a look at it. But with all that said and done, thank you for joining us. Darren, I'm going to turn it to you one quick last time before I say goodbye.
Yes, of course. We always want to make the pitch for members. The reason I'm going to bring it up this year, I mean, it does happen to be Giving Tuesday today, so there's no better gift than local journalism. But the other thing that I wanted to mention was we're really shifting how we operate with our membership. And those members who do join up, we're really trying to mobilize them so that we can have an impact in the city. It's one thing when we impact with local journalism, but it's completely another when we can get a group of people who believe in local journalism, for one. So they're already people who appreciate change, but who are willing to gather together to make an impact for others in the community. So we actually do have a food bank volunteer effort that is coming up here in December in a couple weeks from now. So we're starting to move more towards those experiences that we can have with our membership. So that goes along with our goal to reach 500 members at $10 a month. When you're looking through your giving this holiday season, maybe that's one way to do it.
All right. So if you want to tell us your budget opinions or talk about municipal politics, there are lots of ways for you to do so. You can follow us on Twitter. Darren is at livewire_DK. Jeremy is at JZ from Calgary, and I'm at Esmahan YYC. Make sure to, you know, add us your hot takes, your opinions. We want to hear what you have to say. And just a quick update on Twitter Spaces. I know, Darren, you're still working on seeing how to move it forward.
Actually, breaking news.
Whoa, I just broke a story.
Sorry, Jeremy's sitting there going, man, I'm down under. It's lunchtime here right now. You guys have already had me for an hour.
He's going on Mastodon. That's the breaking news.
No, okay, so Mastodon is one, okay? We're going to see where this Twitter thing goes, but we do have Mastodon as a backup. Here's the other thing. We've decided not to continue with the Fridays at 5, Fridays at 4. And the reason why is because as a journalist, I don't ever want to create a space where only certain opinions are validated. And I felt like the kind of crowd that maybe we were attracting each week, and I could have been the chief orchestrator of that, the conversation sometimes felt like a little bit of an echo chamber. And I don't know that it opened up or was free enough for people to come in and share how they really felt about certain topics without being poo-pooed by some of the louder voices in the room. So we're reevaluating how we might find a better conduit to have public conversation. But right now, the Twitter Spaces is just not the way we're going to do it.
Okay, well, you heard it here first. So thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we will, you'll hear from us again soon.